So that leads us to the text. And I want to set up this text a little bit. This is the lectionary reading. We're going to spend this week and the next couple of weeks in Genesis with the four mothers and forefathers of our faith. This particular story is not one of the better known stories. Just before it is one of the better known stories. Just before the story we're going to read is the story where Abraham takes Isaac up on the hill to sacrifice him. He thinks that's what God wants him to do. And then at the last minute, God sends a sign and things shift. So that's one of the really meaty, well-known stories. This story is kind of more of an, seems like kind of an incidental story that comes along. The other thing that has just happened in this part of the narrative of Genesis is that Sarah, the matriarch of the family, the matriarch of what is to be this great nation, has just died. So this family, this little community, is in a major place of transition. And because of that, Abraham tells his servant, a servant that we never hear the name of, to go get a wife for Isaac among their people, because they have now moved on to the land of Canaan, and he wants the servant to go back and get a wife for Isaac. And that's the story we're going to read. It's kind of a long story, and we're only going to read part of it. So in the Genesis text, you hear about Abraham getting the servant to swear to go do this, and then the servant's journey, and then the servant has this whole interaction with Rebecca and goes with Rebecca back to her family's home. And that's where we're going to pick up the story. And you're going to hear, both Vicki and I are going to read, a big part of the story is the servant retelling what just happened. So I'm going to read the servant's part, and Vicki's going to read the narrator part. One last thing. There will be a quiz. Not really. But I want you to listen very closely, because I am going to ask you, after we share this reading, what you noticed. Was there anything that glimmered for you, that stood out, that made you curious, that you were wanted to know more about, or that struck you somehow? So just listen with that in mind. Listen deeply for what God may be trying to show us or teach us today in this text. All right.
As she said, today's lesson is from the 24th chapter of Genesis. So Abraham's servant said to his hosts,
I am Abraham's servant. God has greatly blessed my master, and he has become wealthy. God has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male and female slaves, camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old. And Abraham has given his son all that he has. My master made me swear, saying, you shall not take a wife for my son from among the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I live. But you shall go to my father's house, to my kindred, and get a wife for my son. So I came today to the spring and said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, if now you will only make successful the way I am going, I am standing here beside this spring of water. Let the young woman who comes out to draw and to whom I shall say, please give me a little drink of water from your jar, and who will say back to me, drink, and I will draw for your camels also. Let that woman be the one that the Lord has appointed for my master's son. And before I had finished speaking in my heart, not out loud, there was Rebecca coming out with her water jar on her shoulder, and she went down to the spring and drew. I said to her, please, let me drink. She quickly let her jar down from her shoulder and said, drink, and I will water your camels too. So I drank, and she watered my camels. Then I asked her, whose daughter are you? She said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. So I put a ring on her nose and bracelets on her arms. Then I bowed my head and worshiped God and blessed God, the God of my master Abraham, who had led me by the right way to obtain a daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. So now then, if you will deal loyally with me and truly with my master, tell me, and if not, tell me, so that I may turn either to the right or the left.
And they called Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" She said, "I will." So they sent away their sister Rebekah and her nurse along with Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "May you, our sister, become thousands of myriads. May your offspring gain possession of the gates of their foes." Then Rebekah and her maids rose up, mounted the camels, and followed the man. Thus the servant took Rebekah and went his way. When they arrived at Isaac's tents, the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought Rebekah into his mother Sarah's tent, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And so Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
So I'm curious, anyone brave enough to say something they might have noticed, anything that struck their curiosity about this story? It's kind of a hard one to hear out loud because there's these different people speaking, but... They asked Rebekah, she got a say in it. I noticed that too. I liked that part of the story. Because that doesn't always happen with these arranged marriages in the biblical text. Rebekah got a say. Anything else? No wrong answers, no right. She didn't go alone. That's right. She went, her nurse, which is not her nurse, but her ladies in waiting, we shall say, went along with her as she journeyed. And it's interesting, actually, the Hebrew, when she arrives, it says that she veils herself and she gets off her camel. The Hebrew actually says that she fell off her camel when she saw Isaac. I don't know if that's favorable or not, but it's kind of dramatic and fun. Anything else that stood out? Yeah. That is true. This the servant, as he's demonstrating that this Abraham is blessed. He lists off all of this wealth along the way, and he, in fact, he brings some of that wealth with him in terms of this, just what every lady wants is a nose ring for her engagement. She gets this nose ring and the bracelet. So there's this demonstration of the wealth, and even the camels, he kind of comes with this caravan along the way. Yeah. Anything else?
The servant was sent back to Abraham's own people to get
the wife. Right.
So the clans were very strong.
Right, that connection. And one of the people that's in that in the tent in this whole conversation is Laban, who Jacob will go get wives from Laban's daughters in the next generation. Yeah. She was. It's true. The servant asked for this kind of sign, but there's some intent around that sign because she was very kind. And of course we know of other biblical stories along the way, say Jesus and the woman at the well that happens in the Gospels, where this sharing of water at the well has this real significant role, and women who share water with strangers. And interestingly enough, of course, camels drink a lot. I mean, gallons and gallons. So for her not only to give water to the guy, that's one thing. But the camels, that's a lot of buckets of water. So you know, she was able to handle herself, let's just say. Yeah. Well, I noticed some things about this text, too, when I was reading it that struck my attention. One is that there was a particular character, very common in the Bible, who was missing in the text in any obvious way, and that's God. You know, in the Genesis story, there are lots of other places where God shows up and speaks. We have, say, later on, we have the story of Jacob wrestling with God. God shows up in this physical kind of way. In this story, and throughout this whole long narrative, God doesn't have an active role in the way that we sometimes see in these older biblical stories. And I liked that because it feels a lot more like my life does in my experiences of God. God doesn't normally just show up and say, this is how it's going to be, and I'm going to knock your hip out of joint to make sure you get it right. More often, it takes a lot of work and discernment for me to figure out where it is that God's calling me along the way. And this reminded me of a couple of other things that I noticed about the text. I liked that prayer that the servant offered was, if then, God, if I say this to this person and she responds in this way, I will know. That's the sign I'm looking for. I'm curious, how many of you have ever prayed for a sign? Yeah, everybody should raise their hand. I know you all have. Yeah. It's one of those things that we do, and sometimes it can seem almost a little superstitious. And yet, sometimes it seems like God does put up these markers in our life along the way that help us know where God is leading us. So I liked that the servant prayed for that. What's interesting about the servant's prayer that we read when he's kind of giving his testimony, he's telling his story, is that there's a couple of things that he leaves out that are in the portion of the text just before where he is at, where the action is happening in real time. In his original prayer, he made two references to God's steadfast love, appealing to God's steadfast love. By this I shall know that you, God, have shown steadfast love to my master. And that's really important. It's kind of this more personal part of the prayer, which might be why he doesn't relay that part of the prayer. Maybe that's not as important when he's telling his story. But in this moment, when he's actually saying the prayer, he's connecting with this faithful God that is not a new God to him, but a God that his master's family, his kin, have been in relationship with for many, many years. God has shown faithfulness over and over to Abraham and his family. The birth of Isaac being an example. Sarah was very old, well past childbearing age, when Isaac was born. So there's a relationship between the servant, the prayer, and the God who he's praying to. The other thing, the servant says in his story that once he meets Rebekah and they have this whole exchange around the water and the camels, that he falls down and worships God because God has answered his prayer. He doesn't do that, actually. That's the story he told. But what he actually did is gaze at her in silence to learn whether or not God had made his journey successful. So even after this whole sign thing happens, even then, he's still kind of waiting to find out what will happen. And then, like I said, I also like the fact that Rebekah got a choice. So it wasn't just the servant, and it also wasn't just her family, but Rebekah also. So there were multiple people involved in this process of discernment, of this work of listening to whether or not this was a match. This is what God was calling. This is what God's calling was. So as I said, I love discernment. I love the topic of discernment, this question of how do we know where God is leading us. And I love to do discernment work with people. So before I came to Carroll, I worked at San Francisco Theological Seminary, one of our Presbyterian seminaries. And that's what I did there. I worked first with admissions and then later continuing to do vocational discernment work with seminary students. And when you're doing vocational discernment work with seminary students, they're discerning on kind of a narrow scale. Is God calling me to be ordained or not? God calling me to seminary or not? What kind of ministry is God calling me to? But what's been really interesting about coming to Carroll is that I find that our students at Carroll are also doing fascinating discernment work all the time about a much larger range of things. It could be, I have a very difficult time with my roommate, and I'm trying to discern whether to stick it out or to change roommates. The discernment of what major to choose, particularly if the major a student wants to study, the field they want to study in is not what their families want them to study in. The choices of what jobs to pursue when they graduate. Choices about relationships that they're in and how they need to grow as a person. Some of the students at Carroll don't name God in this process. It's just figuring out what they want. But some students do. And I love having that conversation, listening with them as they are trying to hear what it is that God has to say to them. It's oftentimes, I think that part of the reason that this happens a lot with Carroll students, or anybody maybe between the age of 18 and 22, is that when you're in the middle of education, things change a lot. Things change a lot when you're at that point in your life. You're being pushed and pulled. So there's almost a constant transition that is happening during this time. And it's around these times of transition, whether you're in college or married with children and changing jobs, or you get ill, you have some sort of illness, and there's either a crisis or a major transition, those are times that the rubber hits the road with discernment work. Those are the times that we spend more time in prayer, more time seeking, more time trying to understand what it is that God intends for our lives. And that can be a very, very stressful work to do, especially if we're trying to do it alone. But to be honest, discernment work is not just about stressful times of transition. Discernment work is about having an ongoing day-to-day relationship with God. When I was in seminary, I had a professor, one of our spirituality professors, who confessed that he lived much of his life as a functional atheist, which I thought was a really odd thing for a spirituality professor to say. We, as people of faith, say that we believe in a God who is active and involved, who has redeemed us and who is working for our wholeness. And yet, we live our lives so often filled with worry and angst. We fail to seek out God's help in difficult times. And oftentimes we let blessings go without giving thanks. We live in many ways like atheists who don't really believe what we proclaim. Discernment is the process of intentionally becoming aware of how God is present, is active, and is calling us as individuals and communities so that we can respond with increasing faithfulness, day in and day out. This is true for our lives as individuals, and it's also true for our lives as families and communities. God is working in our midst, and we have to take time to pay attention. We have to take time to live mindfully and be attentive to the fact that God is real and active and actually cares about us. It's so easy to forget that steadfast love that the text talked about, that God responds to us with that same faithfulness that God responded to our ancestors. So I do think this story has something to teach us about discernment. First of all, central in the story is prayer. Call it a funny prayer about camels, but the point is that the servant takes time to engage God and to listen to God. It's not enough that we pour our own hearts out to God, but we also have to take time to listen. So next week, we're going to be talking about contemplative prayer practices, ways of praying that allow us to listen more deeply to God. It's one of my favorite things to talk about and to teach. I teach it to Carol students a lot. The other thing that I appreciated so much in that text is that there were so many people involved. It wasn't enough that the servant had clarity, but the servant needed to hear from Rebecca's family and from Rebecca herself, and even Abraham in choosing that particular servant to do this important task. There are many people involved in the conversation, and the impact of this marriage is not just on the two people getting married, but on generations to come. The reason that we come to church to be in community is not, we can pray at home on our own, we can sing on our own, though not quite as beautifully. But being in community, we listen differently and more deeply to God by listening to one another's stories, to one another's questions and testimony. Discerning together in community is critical for each of us in our personal faith development, and it's also critical for us as faith communities as we discern where God is leading us as a whole. So the following week, the 23rd, we're going to talk about discernment in community and what that looks like. I believe strongly in a God who is active, who is engaged, who is calling and leading. I believe that God is calling and leading this community. And while you may be going through a time of transition and there is sometimes grief and fear that is associated with that, I also believe that there's hope for what it is that God is calling you to next. I believe there's hope for what God is calling each of us to, because God's call is always faithful, always loving, always working for our wholeness. Amen.